It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
It's been music from Buffalo to Las Vegas for my guest, Michael Ross Nugent. He's performing at Max and Jazz this Saturday, October 19th, from 7 to 10 p.m. For more information, go to maxandjazz.com for everything about Michael. Go to michaelrossnugent.com, and you can follow him on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And Michael, welcome to the show.
Well, hello, Ira. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. I like your beard. You don't have to say you like mine. I just want to say I like your beard.
Well, you know what? It took me 45 minutes to really make it look trimmed. For this, I had to wake up really early, Ira, to do this.
I know. I appreciate it. For our listeners, he really does have a good beard. Now, behind you is a word, but I can't tell what it is because your head is blocking it. Again, for our listeners, not our viewers. Oh, the initials, MRN. Very good.
Okay. MRN. And that's the city of Buffalo below it.
Nice. Very nice.
And my Buffalo Bills.
I was going to say, a sports fan. Yeah, you Buffalo guys are very loyal. I like that. So, from what I understand, you love big bands since you were a teenager. And it's not necessarily that you're going to be doing that at Max and Jazz, but I was interested in your big band love. Where did that come from? Because you are clearly in a mode of, you look like a jazz guy to me more than a big band guy. But where did that big band stuff come from?
Yeah, it's a great question. I played trombone, you know, from the time I was 9 years old all the way up through high school. And, you know, you did the marching band and the jazz band and the full orchestra. And when I was 16 years old, I heard Michael Bublé for the first time. And, you know, when I was 16, people were listening to Taylor Swift, Justin Bieber, Kanye West, all that stuff. And it never really inspired me. But when I heard Michael Bublé, you know, that big band coming on and songs like Summer Wind, Call Me Irresponsible, you know, The Way You Look Tonight, I'm like, wow, this is amazing. I love this. So it really inspired me to start singing. I never thought I'd be a singer in a million years. And obviously, I had to come to Vegas to continue my career because I've been doing it for about 10 years now. And I've been in Vegas for 5 years. And I just love the music. I love the jazz standards. I love, of course, you know, having as many horns as you can, right? But even doing it with a trio or a quartet, like we're doing at Max and Jazz, I just love those songs, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s. It's just the best.
Well, the irony is that, as you just mentioned, the 30s, the 40s, even a little bit of the 20s, the late 20s too, that it wasn't your direct connection with that, but it was through Bublé that it was a connection. Yeah. So you had a different generation singer, performer, yes, introducing you as a singer performer to this world of music, Great American Songbook and jazz standards, etc. And you do have, you also remind me of a couple other people, which I'll bring to the fore as we talk, as well, that there's just some people that have this instinctive connection with jazz and big band, and they are an anomaly within their own generation.
Yeah, totally. I'm an old soul. And I don't know why I'm so nostalgic for an era that I've never seen. It's just in every molecule of my body. It's very interesting. Even when I was a little kid, when I'd go to the toy store, I would pick, you know, an old fashioned car or a steam engine. I didn't want the diesel engine, you know. It's been a theme my whole life. I've always been drawn to just vintage things, you know, and I love spending time with my grandparents, and I still have a few of them around, and you know, I love to catch up with them, and I also love to sing in the retirement communities. I've been doing it for the past 10 years, so it's a beautiful thing to go and spend time with those people because that's the music they grew up with.
Yeah, that's a rare perspective, but a needed one in society when you realize and honor people that have been around and with us for a long time. And it's not just the cliche wisdom that they have. It's really more a recognition that they've lived full lives and they can actually suggest things to you, give you some perspectives that you didn't have before. And you recognize that at an early age. Were your parents aware of your love for big band and jazz at an early stage? And were they supportive of your decision to become a performer?
Sure. Well, they definitely knew that I was a performer. I would always tell jokes and, you know, I would like to do impressions as a little kid. I was never really shy.
Wait a minute. You said impressions. Give us an example. Is there popular people or Buffalo people?
You know, I would say my impressions are long gone of what I used to do, especially when I hit puberty recently. At 30 years old, I can't do the same impressions I used to do. But just little things, you know, at the you know, birthday parties as a little kid, I was always, you know, kind of the entertainer. But like I said, I played trombone and I really loved it. And I'd like to really get back into it. But I love band. That was my favorite. And so they definitely knew I was musical. And then I really didn't start singing till I was 16, 17, 18. I was not in the choir in high school. I wasn't in the plays, believe it or not. I was in the band and I was on the football team. There's my jersey actually right there.
I see it. Yeah. You're number 33.
Yeah, that's my number. So yeah, it was really, I heard this music, Michael Bublé, and I'm like, where do these songs come from? And I knew who Frank Sinatra was and Dean Martin, but that opened the doorway to learning about Bobby Darin and Ella Fitzgerald and Mel Torme and Vic Damone. And I just fell in love with it. And it just syncs with me, you know? So mm-hmm. We got to keep this music around. Somebody's got to do it. Who's a millennial. You know, I was born in the mid 90s. Somebody's got to do it.
And you're one of them. One of the people I mentioned earlier that you reminded me of is Matt Dusk, who.
Yeah, sure.
There's others too.
Interpretations of all those songs. Great.
Yeah.
So he the other day. Yeah.
And of course, he performed in Vegas for many years too. So you're in good company. When you decided to make the move from Buffalo to Las Vegas, was it a direct flight, so to speak, or did you travel around indirectly and then eventually get to Las Vegas, where you knew that's where you wanted to be, but along the way you stopped in other cities or sailed the Ocean Blue or whatever?
Yeah, it was February of 2019. I had to bring all of my sound equipment and my suits. So I drove, you know, so there was no going back, right? You're here, you're committed.
But it was directly from Buffalo to Las Vegas though, right?
Yeah, it was about 36 hours of driving. My dad came with me, so we had a really nice time traveling the country. I mean, traveling the country in February can be a little tough, but we did it. And, we drove through states I've never been to, Missouri, Indiana. We drove through the Rocky Mountains. We almost slid off the road in Utah in a snowstorm. I mean, it was pretty wild. We got to the hotel at 3 a.m. in the morning, right, in Utah, and we put the key in the door, and we opened the door, and there's somebody in the room. The voice is like, hello? Okay, wrong. Sorry.
See, what you should have done is break out into song.
You know, if the voice didn't sound a little scary to me, I would have.
I was more concerned when you tell me driving with your dad in the car across country. My main concern was not that you're going to go off the road, but more, where did you put all the suits? I mean, I can imagine with the instruments, the suits, your dad's luggage, etc. I mean, it's sure. Got to be packed pretty full.
Yeah, I had to pack very light. I had to have my sound equipment in the back. My suits were stacked up very carefully in the back seat. And it was a beautiful 2.5 days. My dad and I will always cherish that memory. And then I moved in with a friend of mine who had an extra room. He was from Buffalo. He lived down the street from me. So I had a wonderful connection here. And I stayed with my friend for 3 months while I got going. And it was amazing. I only had one gig, Ira. I had one gig on the books. And I did it for free, which everybody in this business, we've all done it. And we still do it. And from there, you know, I started to get traction, right? And I was doing 3 gigs a month, 4, 5, 10. You know, now I've been here for 5 years and it's really been a blessing. The town has been great to me, Ira.
Well, you have courage, which I admire in this sense that it's tough competition in any city in music, but particularly in Las Vegas. because you've got the competition of not just a strip in downtown, but so many new venues now that are around the valley that, and people who are listening and watching from outside of Las Vegas realize that there's a lot more here than just the strip in downtown, but you're competing with a lot of other entertainers, productions, other kinds of music, plays, etc. And yet you stuck it out. Did your folks get a chance to see you perform in Las Vegas over these years?
Yes, they have. Yeah, they both have come here multiple times and they've gotten to see me. And back to your earlier question, they've been very supportive from the very beginning. I did about a year and a half of college. And during the second year, I was like, I don't know if I want to do this. I want to sing. So, because I started to miss classes for gigs, that's what was going on.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, sorry, I have to go to the senior center. I really don't want to sit here through calculus.
Right. does it take when you're performing in local venues and senior citizen venues and other kinds of places that are don't necessarily have the brightest lights, but they're still performing arenas that you realize that this is something you have to do because you have to continue to work. You have to continue to perform. And if you have basic talent, when I say basic, that's not a derogatory term. What I'm saying is if you have talent, you know, you may take X amount of time to get to a level you want to get to, but you know you can do it because you have that basic talent.
Yeah, absolutely. In this business, especially now, you really have to grind it out. You really have to take really any opportunity that you can get to go and perform for people because you got to make a living. Because I do this full time, you know, which I'm very blessed to be able to say that I can do it full time. But you got to hustle. You have to be very disciplined. And I look at it as I don't care where I'm singing. I don't care where the venue is, how many people are there. I give my all to my audience. And even if nobody's listening, I still have fun because I love it. I love it so much. So sometimes I'm in a retirement community. Sometimes I'm in a lounge. Maybe there's 10 people in there. Sometimes I'm in a lounge. Maybe it's rocking. Every seat is filled. Everybody's engaged. Sometimes I'm in a theater, you know, with 500-600 people. Sometimes I'm at a wedding. It doesn't matter where I am. I love it. And you know, I'm doing about 25 to 30 events a month. I actually have two gigs today. So it's just in this town, there's a lot of work, but you got to go out and you got to get it. And I love it. I love the hustle. And it's just I love people. So I love going out every day.
Yeah, it works for you. And I should point out to the people who are listening rather than watching that you actually got dressed up for the show, which I appreciate. Or it could be that you're going to a gig and it just happened to have your suit and shirt and tie on.
I did get dressed up for the show. I was looking at my suits. I'm like, what would look good? I actually set up the Zoom camera, Ira.
I love it.
For this, and I'm like trying on different jackets. So this is, I was getting the lighting right. I mean, yeah. I can say, Ira, I may have even done makeup on my nose.
And I feel underdressed now because you're in a suit.
You look good. I like your backdrop there. I like that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's Las Vegas. I want to point out also that when you're performing, it's not just you, you've got people with you. So for example, at the Maxim gig coming up again, October 19th from 7 to 10 p.m. this Saturday, you have David Richardson on piano, Bill Bailey on bass, and Bill Bailey, Won't You Come Home, Mark Barrett on drums, and Gary Anderson on sax. So you've got a nice group behind you, and I know you could make it work without anybody. I don't want to tell those guys that, but with them, it makes you better.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, going back to the business part of it, sometimes you got to sing without a band. You know, not every venue has the budget or the space. So there's no shame in singing to tracks. I mean, everybody does it and you got to do it. You got to do it to survive. But when you have the band, that's the best thing. It really gives you the most freedom, of course, because these guys give you that energy, right? It goes to me. It goes to the audience. Mm-hmm. It goes to them. It's just this whirlwind of energy. And having a 4-piece band is so much fun. You know, I played up to, you know, having 10 pieces, up to 18 pieces, you know, but this group that we have at Maxon for Friday the 19th, or is it Saturday?
Look Saturday. At
this. When you turn 30, Ira, you're already forgetting things. You're already forgetting things. But no, it really gives you freedom when you have the real deal like that. And these guys played with Wayne Newton. They've played with Sinatra. You know, Dave Richardson, you know, plays with Santa Fe and the Fat City Horns. These are top notch guys, and they're great people as well. They're great people.
Do they up your game in a sense because of their background and their skill and talent?
100%. Because in a way you kind of want to impress them, you know, while you're trying to impress the audience, you want to impress them too. And when those guys look at you while you're singing and they're playing and they're smiling at you, like that's like big dopamine hit.
Yeah, I bet it would. And plus too, it spreads the word too. Hey, that guy's really good. You know, come see him or play with him if he asks you to play. And
yeah, it's kind of like an endorsement in a way when these guys will play with you. It is an honor, and they've become friends of mine, and they look out for me, and they teach me things, and you know, they tell me about the business, and they look, you know, it's really, you get a friend and an unbelievable musician in the same person. And these guys have been great to me.
Yeah. I was going to say you're a gentleman and a scholar, but you're not a scholar because you left college after that.
That's
first
right.
Time.
I got my high school diploma right behind me.
I want to go back to your early years for a second. I jump around a little bit. I like it. That old way to approach it. But when you were focusing on big band and jazz, and again, your contemporaries at the time were into other music, let us put it that way. Were you able to find like-minded individuals, perhaps roughly your age, or did you generally sound like you were geared mostly to people that were older than you because you had a certain maturity at that point, especially musical maturity?
Sure.
So were you connecting more with older people in your teenage years because of your interests in music, or were you able to find a few people even at your age that were interested in that kind of music?
That's a great question. I mean, I would find a few people because honestly, a lot of the places I was singing at, you know, I was in bars, I was in country clubs, you know, at 19 years old, I wasn't old enough to drink yet. They had to put a X on my hand.
Exactly.
And of course, you know, the senior centers and the assisted livings. So I really, when I was on a Friday or Saturday night, all my friends were out downtown, you know, hanging out and drinking, and I was working. You know, I was at a wedding. I was, you know, so it really was mostly people that were far older than me. But I would say when I would sing at weddings, the wedding party, you know, they were all my age, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they would go crazy for this music. They would all come up. They're like, dude, you're our age and you like Frank Sinatra? And some of them are like, I've never heard that song. I would say the younger, you know, the girls my age were more in tune to Michael Bublé and stuff like that, maybe than the guys. But at weddings is when I'd run into people my age and they would just love it. They're like, this is classy. I'm like, yeah, don't listen to that stuff on the radio. It's terrible.
And is that the first time they heard that music because you were singing it at the wedding?
Yeah, some of them. Some of them literally told me that. And that's what Michael Bublé did for me. And, you know, now that I'm older, a little bit older now, I'm seeing kids that are in their early 20s, you know, and I'm doing that for them. I hope to. So that's why I just want to reach as many, especially young people, as possible. I want to be nostalgic for the older crowd so they can reminisce. And then I want to introduce this to the younger crowd so they can have the benefit of this music. So that there's two different things going on.
It's a fine line, but as you say, when you're performing at weddings, you're able to pull that off. So I think you can definitely pull it off in other venues, clearly.
Yeah, absolutely. And singing Michael Bublé bridges the gap because he's got great original songs that are really for all ages. And I do a Michael Bublé tribute show as well. And I do it here in town, and we're taking it out on the road. We're going to Texas and Arizona and Ohio, which is amazing. I feel very blessed to be traveling. But Vegas is a great base to work here locally and then to fly out of. So
Yeah. And for those who are interested in any of that, you can go to michaelrossnugent.com. And I like a man with three names. I don't know why, but I do. It just works out.
Well, Michael Nugent is an NFL football player. So, I mean, I don't like to brag, but I'm not in the NFL anymore. I left last year.
I thought you left in high school. Wait a minute. You're still doing it. Okay.
So right. Type in Michael Nugent. There's an NFL football player. Then somebody said, just do Michael Ross. That's your stage name.
Or my guest is Ted Nugent, who
or
is
Ted. I just say he's my uncle. He's Uncle Ted. If you type in Michael Ross, Ira, you're going to find a serial killer. So that's not me.
No, it's Michael Ross Nugent. You got to get the whole three names. I know that's fine. When you are performing on stage, do you vary it in the sense that because of the quartet behind you, and you feel comfortable enough to do it, are you able to switch gears and all of a sudden say, hey, guys, I'm going to go this way, I'm going to go that way, or you may improvise within a song and they're able to follow you?
100%. I really don't have set lists unless I'm doing a theater show where, you got to go boom, 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 boom.
Right.
But at Maxon or in any other lounge with a group, I just feel the room. I have all my songs in my keys memorized. And I can completely switch gears on a dime because, maybe you don't want to do a ballad at that time. Maybe you got to keep the energy up. Maybe it's a good time to do a ballad. So I assess the situation after every song, and these guys are so good. I just say, come fly with me. Key of C. Boom. They're gone. Right. Yeah. So these guys are pros. So I can switch gears at any time, and I really don't like to stay on a set list.
Yeah, no, I think it's more fun when you don't have a set list.
Yeah.
It makes it's more creative in a sense. And it keeps you interested too, because you don't want to always do the same
100%.
Order of things, right? I want to go back to something you said, and that was that when you were in high school and kids were out hanging at the bar, you were doing gigs. And I take from that you were not a workaholic per se, but you were disciplined to what you were interested in. And that's why you were doing that. You're also making money, clearly, but you were developing your talent over time and you were performing. So it wasn't that you were working to just work and avoid everything else. It was mainly that was your focus. Is that right?
I mean, that's 100% correct. When I started singing in retirement communities, really, those are like my first couple of gigs. And when you go and do that, it's very humbling because you're going in there and, these people are in rough shape. They're not in good health or they're lonely. And when you go in there at 19, 20 years old and you see that and you sing for these people and you make their day, it's sort of like life changing. Honestly, it changed me because it gave me meaning. It gave, when you're young at that age, you're kind of searching for meaning, why am I here? What am I supposed to do? Where do I go? And when I went and started singing and performing, especially for the senior citizens, it gave me this deep sense of meaning that I was doing something bigger than myself. So I would take gigs, at the drop of a hat. I didn't care what time it was or, what I was missing per se. I went and did it, and I've been committed to it for the past 11 years. So.
Did you find that there was initial resistance or reluctance to appreciate you in that kind of format because you were such a young guy, or did you sort of win them over very quickly because you had the talent?
Well, I would say that I was embraced fully, and I was really never discouraged by anybody. And, I've done thousands of performances. And that's not to say that maybe somebody said something discouraging, but that's okay because you got to shake it off. That's what we do, right?
Right. But I meant the reason I'm asking the question is because you are appealing to a different generation, and they're usually more comfortable with a performer in their generation. So here you come in as a young guy, and you win them over. So clearly, you had something going for you.
Yeah, I'm trying to say it in a humble way, but no, it was like. Love instantly with these people because they're like, you're so young. Thank you for doing this. No, it was like, it just became an addiction to me to go to these people and be with them. And they were very, and still are, very appreciative. I'm actually doing a senior community today in a few hours.
Great. I was going to ask you whether you'd still do that in Las Vegas. And obviously you do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And do you get a chance to talk with some of them too? Because that's important, the interaction either before or after the performance.
Always. Yeah. Always. That, you know, they'll come up to me and, "You sang the song that my wife and I danced to at our wedding in 1959. And, you know, everything, you know, World War II stories, everything that you can imagine that somebody mm-hmm. would want to share with you, you know, who's, you know, a baby boomer or a part of the greatest generation, you know, they're wonderful. They're just, I mean, they really are. It's like they adopt me.
You know, yeah, no, I can see that. You should take notes each time you do that too, because down the road that might make an interesting, if not a book, yeah. certainly a blog about your experiences, because it might give some incentive to other performers to do that. A lot of performers don't do that. Some do. I know some locals sure. that do that, but I think that would be a great way to kind of spread that concept.
I agree. I've documented a few things that, you know, I have things that people have given me. It really is an amazing thing to be with those people and for them to share their life with you.
A couple of quick things before I let you go. Recording. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about recording?
Well, I record here at home, and, you know, people want to hear you, especially people from my hometown of Buffalo, because they can't see me anymore, really. So it's amazing. The technology is incredible today. So I literally, on this laptop, I can record, you know, my songs, and I put them on YouTube and this and that. And it is an interesting, it's completely different from live singing. And it's something that you really got to work on, because you want to deliver the song, but there's nobody here to give you that energy.
Right.
You know, to properly maybe deliver it. So you really, really, you really got to work on your mentality there in delivery when you're.
But recording. I was thinking maybe an album of your tribute to Bublé, or an album of Broadway songs or big band standards or jazz classics, any of that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, we're definitely working on an original song, because, you know, you got to have original music. So we're working on that. And we're also working on, you know, my own arrangements of songs that have already been done, but in a different way. And that's, you know, that's what Harry Connick has done, mm-hmm. you know, Michael Bublé, of course. So it's just something that you need. You got to have it. And it's funny, CDs are like disappearing. It's not.
Yeah, anymore. I know. It's all online.
All online.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Before I let you go, plans for the future in the next couple of years, just basically performing sure. primarily in Las Vegas, but also doing some touring. And do you see any major changes coming up in the next couple of years, or you want to kind of keep a steady course at this point?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I don't really have a specific goal. My strategy is more of following a system, reaching as many people as possible, and playing in bigger and bigger venues. Now, 2025 is going to be a big year, because I already have, you know, three different cities on the books, and I've really been stationary here in Vegas. We've been working the Bublé show here in Vegas for the past few years, and it's ready to be taken out on the road. And we have other shows in mind that I'd like to do. Maybe a Bobby Darin show. I'm a big Bobby Darin fan, and I love singing his arrangements. But really, Ira, it's about getting out into the country. We got to travel. You got to do it. In this business, yeah. I mean, you could stay stationary, and that's fine too. And Vegas is a great place locally to do it, but it's a good home base, I would say. But you really got to get out there and go to different cities. And I also want to bring this home to Buffalo too. And we're working on a homecoming show as well. So yeah, 2025 is going to be a pivotal year for me. And this is a tough business, but if you really love it and you're crazy enough,
well, that's
it's rewarding. It really is. And you got to be disciplined in this business too. You can't treat your body poorly, because you got to go out and perform, because people are going to see you only once, and you want to be in your best shape every time you go out.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Michael Ross Nugent. He's performing at Max and Jazz this Saturday, October 19th from 7 to 10 p.m. For more information, go to maxandjazz.com. And for everything about Michael, including upcoming performances elsewhere, go to Michael Ross Nugent, michaelrossnugent.com. And you can follow him on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And Michael, thanks for being on the show.
Ira, thank you so much for having me. It was great talking with you.
Same here. See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world.